Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Executing the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in
complete coordination between the dedicated designs and to the earth, which was considered to be his daughter. Then Maharaj Krishna left the presence of his citizens, who were always lamenting and crying from fearing separation from the king, and went out to the forest alone with his wife to perform austerities. Translation responsibly. At the last stage of his life, when Maharaj Krishna saw himself getting old, who was king of the world, divided whatever opulence he had accumulated amongst all kinds of living entities, moving and non-moving. He arranged pensions for everyone according to religious principles. And after executing the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in complete coordination with him, he dedicated his sons unto the earth, which was considered to be his daughter. Then Maharaj Krishna left the presence of his citizens, who were always lamenting and crying from fear of separation from the king. And went to the forest alone with his wife to perform a service. Therefore, Maharaj Krishna was one of the Shaktivesh incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and as such, he appeared on the surface of the earth to execute the orders of the Supreme. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Lord is the provider of all planets. And he is always anxious to see that in each and every planet, the living entities are happily living and executing their duties. As soon as there is some discrepancy in the execution of duties, the Lord appears on earth, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 4.7, Yidāna Yidāvimhāsya, Lāni Yidāvimhāratam. Since there were so many discrepancies during the reign of King Vena, the Lord sent his most confidential devotee Maharaj Krishna to settle these. Therefore, after executing the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and settling the affairs of the world, Maharaj Krishna was ready to retire. He had been exemplary in his governmental administration, and now he was to become exemplary in his retirement. He divided all his property amongst his sons and appointed them to rule the world, and then he went to the forest with his wife. It is significant in this connection that it is said that Maharaj Krishna retired alone and at the same time to his wife with him. According to Vedic principles, when retiring from family life, one can take his wife with him, but a husband and wife are considered to be one unit. Thus, they can both combinedly perform a series of liberation. This is the path that Maharaj Krishna, who was an exemplary character, followed. And this is also the way of Vedic civilization. One should not simply remain at home until the time of death, but should separate from family life at a timely moment and prepare himself to go back to Godhead. As a Shaktivesh incarnation of God, who had actually come from Vaikuntha as a representative of Krishna, Maharaj Krishna was certain to go back to Godhead. Nonetheless, in order to set the example in all ways, he also underwent severe austerities in the Tapovana. It appears that in those days there were many Tapovanas, or forests, especially meant for retirement and the practice of austerities. Indeed, it was compulsory for everyone to go to the Tapovana to fully accept the shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For it is very difficult to retire from family life and at the same time remain at home. Om Gyanam Jasya Gyanam Jana Shalakaya Chakshurmanitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Nishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Upagramayam Dadati Svaparantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Parakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shirupam Sarvajatam Sahagna Raghunatham Tam Tam Sajivam Sarvetam Sarvadutam Prajna Sahitam Krishna Chaitam Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagna Lalita Shri Vishakam Tam Star Hey Krishna Guruna Sindhu Dinabandhu Tikapate Gopesha Gopika Anta Radha Anta Most Today Tattakanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavane Shri Vrishabhanu Sate Devi Pranamami Hari Priya Panchakapa Krumita Krita Sindhu Devita Patitanam Pavnego Vaishnavego Namo Nama Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadara Shri Radhe Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
The verse can so the first chapter, first verse of a new many chapters discussing the life and activities of Maharaj Kirtan. And there's a little bit of discussion about Maharaj Kirtan being a Kshatavesha avatar of Krishna. So perhaps that's already been covered in classes, but I'm not too sure, but we can always revise. Then I'll have a magic trick to perform. Then there's a heavy statement from Prabhupada to throw in there. Who likes heavy statements from Prabhupada? Guru is heavy, so you know, we have to accept that and read Prabhupada's answer, that our ideas will be a bit exalted by the statements of the acharyas. we'll do some vocabulary and we'll say some Krishna Leela. So he's excited for class. So Maharaj Kirtu Zaya Shaktivesha of Krishna, meaning that he's actually a jiva, for a living entity empowered by Krishna. So he's considered as good as Krishna, but he's still a living entity. And similar examples of Shaktivesh empowered incarnations are, let's see, there is anyone assisting discussing the class earlier? Does anyone have any idea who are other examples of empowered incarnations?
Jesus.
Oh, Jesus, yes. Yes, that's true. And whenever Prabhupada is talking about chapter 8, empowering incarnations, he always mentions these two personalities, Lord Jesus and Lord Buddha, as empowering incarnations of Krishna. So, it's funny, you see they get annoyed at Christians because they always say, oh, Jesus is God, Jesus is God. And in one sense, when we see from this perspective, they are right, that Jesus is a empowering incarnation of the Lord. But he is not, these are still living entities, they're not Vishnu Tapa, they're not directly the Supreme Lord. So this is the nice thing about Krishna consciousness, that you get such a full and complete understanding of the science of God. And without which, people are kind of religious and they love Jesus, but then they love hamburgers as well. When that it's good to have this complete understanding. Even, so, and according to this, you know, definition of the Tao incarnation, and you could conjecture that Srila Prabhupada himself was Tao incarnation, and I think, maybe Gopur Vindeshwar, who was asking Bhana Maharaj once, and Bhana Maharaj thought, well, but Prabhupada has a different spiritual form. That's not his spiritual form when he came to this earth, so perhaps not a Shaktivesha incarnation. But still, it is obviously, and Prabhupada quotes that no one can be, no one can preach without being endowed by Krishna. So obviously, Prabhupada was endowed. And so some other incarnations, other examples anyone can think of already? I guess that maybe he's carrying the, and which Shakti is he? Yes. Anyone, any other examples? Yasadeva, yes. He's a, also a living entity. And there's some other examples, the Kumaris, who were early in his Tata. We have the Shakti of Gyan Shakti, spreading knowledge. Parashuram, yes. Which Shakti was he endowed with? Sorry?
Warrior,
yes. To kill his fears. I read somewhere in CC the Sanskrit for that. Dhamma, something. But then, Krishna Maharaj, he has the Shakti of maintaining the living entities as the king. So that's called Pavana Shakti. Pavana meaning maintain Gopal Krishna. So,
Prabhupada,
yes, I was mentioning that, probably. And so, Parashuram, so I think we've covered most of those. So, Prabhupada was explaining to one of the devotees that, you know, there's incarnations that can be either Vishnu Tapa or Jiva Tapa. So, you know, the Vishnu Tapa are Kapila Muni, Narayana Rishi, Ram, Balaram, the Purusha Avatars. The Purusha Avatars actually, they are also Shaktivesha Avatars. It's described by Lord Chaitanya that actually there's the primary Shaktivesha Avatars and secondary. So there's kind of a division there. The primary are Ananta Shesh and Ananta and Shesha, and also mentions, I think somewhere I read the Purushas also, that doesn't sound right, but Purushas is incarnation. Oh no, they're partial, sorry. Purusha incarnations are partial incarnations. And Lord Ramana is also given the operates the Shakti of creation, so he is also considered to be a Shakti Vesha avatar. So yeah, there's the Vishnu Tattva incarnation and the Jiva Tattva. So then we also see just amongst devotees, you know, general devotees, you know, circle, we can see devotees can become empowered with a particular service. That if you think of some devotee and you think, oh yes, that's if you eat their prasadam, they'll blow you away when you eat their prasadam. They're empowered like that. Or they're, or kirtan, which is a bit of a perhaps hazy one, because people can think someone's empowered to do kirtan because they sing very well and play instruments very well, but the actual measure of being empowered to do kirtan is that you, you know, create the feeling of Vaikuntha, the joy and ecstasy of Vaikuntha through kirtan, which is shown by Prabhupada that his chanting, the devotees were present in his kirtans, just felt like they were in Vaikuntha, the spiritual world was there, they were there, Krishna, just by Prabhupada chanting the whole name. So that can be there, devotees can have some in God for kirtan. You might say that the Buddhas is empowered with guarding or So then how do devotees become empowered is that, you know, firstly they're very sincere in their service and they just follow strictly the orders of the acharyas. So following, you know, as we've seen Asya Prasada, Bhagavan Prasada, when we follow the orders of the spiritual master, then we can become empowered in our service. And because Krishna is pleased by that service, that we're working to please the spiritual master, and so we, you know, give some spiritual energy like that. But the devotee, even though they may be empowered in a particular service or multiple services, but the devotee does not become proud, because they know that they are only an instrument for Krishna. All these shaktis of, you know, Bhakti Shakti, Gyan Shakti, they're all Krishna's energies. So the devotee understands is that whatever they are able to do in devotional service is just Krishna's mercy, that Krishna is using them as an instrument. As he says in Bhagavad Gita, Nishamatam Avasadhi Satin. So the best that Arjuna could do on that day was to become Krishna's instrument. And similarly for us, the best we can do is become very faithful to the spiritual master and Prabhupada, and in that way become a better instrument for Krishna, for spreading Krishna consciousness. So that's a bit about Shakti Vaishya Avatars. So I promised a magic trick. So the magic trick is that when I click my fingers, we're all going to talk about Vanashamana, and everyone will sleep. That's the magic trick. Vanashamana, fall asleep. So we have the Shudras, Vaishyas, Kshatriyas, Brahmanas, then the Ashrams, Brahmachari, Vinyasa, Vanasa, Sanyas. So we heard it so many times. But actually, when it comes up all the time in Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita about having regulating our lives according to these Vanas and Ashrams. But for the purpose of developing Krishna consciousness, so you might kind of wonder that why is this emphasized so much? Because Lord Chaitanya says, "Naham vipranata, naham vipranata, narapati, nadi vashu nashudur, naham vani nata vinapati, na." No vanaso yativa hindu prajan ukila pramananda punamrita gopratu parakamo dasa sundas. I am not Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra. I am not a Brahmachari, a Grihastha, a Vanaprastha, or a Sannyasi. What am I? I am the eternal servant of the servant of Lord Krishna.
who is the main name of gopis. So, and also we emphasize, or we have this verse from Rupa Goswami in Nectar of Devotion, that Sarva Pahini Nishantam, that we have to be free from all designations. If we want to practice pure devotional service, we have to be free from designations, and these designations include I'm a householder, I'm a brahmachari, I'm a brahmana, etc. These are designations that prevent one from attaining to pure devotional service. And only when all these upadis are gone, then we can actually serve Krishna with purified senses. And also Bhagavatam says that the perfection of Varnam Ashram is to please Krishna. Samsiddhi Bhagavatam. So therefore we can think, you know, why Varnam Ashram dance so talked about so much, when it's ultimately about to kind of give it up to attain to devotional service. As Krishna says, and also Sadhana Pritchaja, give up all your duties and activities and just surrender them to me. But that verse, that giving up all your activities and religious duties or Vaishnava duties, this comes at the end of the Bhagavad Gita. And Krishna explains in the Uddhava Gita, in Canto 11 of Bhagavatam, he's explaining about the Vaishnava Nashram, the Uddhava Gita, and he says in one verse that one who is not surrendered to me should move progressively from one pastime to another, never acting otherwise. So this is the first point, the key point why we follow Varna and Ashram. We're not fully surrendered to Krishna yet. So, and when we are fully surrendered to Krishna, then even then we'll follow Varna and Ashram just as an example to everyone else, and not kind of acts like upstart, kind of upsetting the whole system that's there. And just like Prabhupada took sannyas, he was a householder, then he took sannyas. But he was being a pure devotee, he had no necessity for that. Similarly, it's explained. Amrish Maharaj had no necessity to take vanaprastha, because he's already a pure devotee. But for the general devotees who we're on the path of surrender, we're progressing toward full surrender. And so for us, then Varnashram is there. And also, secondly, we see that without doing these Varnas and Ashrams properly, that devotees can struggle to perform devotional service regularly. You see that, for example, if someone is not married, and then you know they're not so regular with their services and chanting, or if their ashram becomes disturbed in some way, then you know, because particularly it's mentioned that household life is meant to make the mind peaceful, so that we can continue practicing devotional service just you know steadily, peacefully. And so when there's kind of when it's not followed regularly, and Varnashram is not followed regularly, then it can create kind of disturbances in the mind, and then the devotee may, you know, cause trouble for themselves or others. Just
just like my Guru Maharaj described about the Brahmastra. So you've heard of this word Brahmastra? That's a type of weapon. And but also it means a Brahmastra is a Brahmachari who wants to be a Grihastha. Brahmastra. So they can become that they can become very, you know, there's not a kind of, the mind doesn't become settled, then they'll, you know, create problems. Actually, even, you know, maybe an extreme example, but my guru kind of recommends that if single ladies, they shouldn't go to Mayapur by themselves. They should be with other people in, because maybe they'll get approached by some brahmachari who's, you know, not happy in the position. So this can happen. So that's why it's important that we're correctly situated in the Divine Ocean system. And, you know, it's nice if not everyone's kind of born in a family where their parents will do that for them. And so it's nice if such devotees can have assistance there. But anyway, so that's important. And also just as an example to the rest of society, that we, I think last week when I was on Harina, someone just came and asked me, like, you know, little chanting was going on and big kirtan on the street. And someone just came and asked me, oh, like, how do you guys maintain yourself when you guys are working and stuff? And I was like, yeah, no problem, we've all got jobs and stuff. And so then he asked me, like, I've done all this stuff. Someone, I don't know, homeless person or something. Like, oh, you guys are working, that's the man. So yeah, as an example to society, that this was maybe in the early days of Islam, non-devotees would kind of criticize devotees that you're not working, you're just a parasite on society, just living off the rest of us and, you know, dancing and jumping around on the street, not doing anything useful. So that's fine for Brahmacharis to do that. But yeah, others, good society sees that devotees are just, you know, kind of living a so-called normal life like that. So Bhikkhu Maharaj, he was acting in his role in Banach Madan, he was a king. He's a Kshatriya and a householder. And it says in this verse, Yahasyam, he was operating in coordination with Krishna. So this is actually a big service for the kings, that the whole material world is just meant for forgetfulness of Krishna. And, you know, people want to get as far away from God as they can. And the duty of the king is to wind that back and bring people back to God consciousness and actively make sure that everyone is doing their duties, you know, doing sacrifice which will purify them and gradually get them on the path of devotional service. Maybe not full devotional service immediately, but at least they're doing their prescribed duties, they will, according to the Vedas, then that will give them merit, highest merit. And so the king had a very good job to do like that, and therefore that's pleasing to Krishna. They're known as the Lord in human form nowadays. And so they're trying to bring back these rebellious souls to Krishna. Even Prabhupada says that just to make one devotee, we have to stain the gallons of blood by talking to them and convincing them and cultivating them over time. So what's the secret? The king is responsible for so many citizens and helping them in Krishna consciousness. So therefore they have to be very powerful and have a lot of power from Krishna. Of course, people in that time were more agreeable to Krishna consciousness, they were kind of more pious. And the citizens would obey the king, not out of fear, but they would obey the king out of love and respect. So we see, still see a few countries nowadays, like Thailand and formerly Nepal, before the Maithi in Nepal kind of murdered everyone, I think, so maybe a decade ago. But before that, then everyone had a lot of love and affection and respect for the royal family. So that's still visible in Thailand, for example. So therefore, it was easier for the king to lead the people. They weren't so rebellious and fastidious. So then the main focus of this chapter, in this verse as well, is the Vanaprastha Ashram, which comes after, obviously, after the Grihastha Ashram. So Prabhupada explains elsewhere that it's essential for one to renounce family responsibilities and fully concentrate on the lotus feet of Vasudeva. So, and he also explains that, you know, materialists really abhor these two ashrams of Vanaprastha and Ashram. You know, because these two ashrams, Vanaprastha and Sannyas, they're about giving up sex life and just fully focusing on Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada says, therefore the materialists say their bodies. So I was saying that I would say throwing some vocabulary in the class, and who knows this word at all, or who can tell that word at all, maybe I've heard at all, meaning, or spell it. If someone abhors something.
Detest.
Yes, they detest, maybe that's a mental question. They really dislike, strong dislike, or even disgust or hate. A-V-H-O-R, abhor. So the materialists say they hate the idea of giving up sex life because their whole life is just based on, centered around that and maintaining the sense enjoyment. So therefore, yeah, the materialists strongly dislike Vanaprastha and the idea of Vanaprastha. And so the head statement by Prabhupada that I was mentioning, that in further later on in Canto 4, the word Pramana Sangha Dushita indicates that apart from all other contamination, if one simply remains attached to a woman, that single contamination will be sufficient to prolong one's miserable material existence. Consequently, in Vedic civilization, one is trained from the beginning to give up attachment to women. The first stage of life is Brahmacharya, the second stage is Grihastha, the third stage is Vanaprastha, and the fourth stage is Sannyas. All these stages are devised to enable one to detach himself from the association of women. So of course, for men, woman is woman. For women, man is woman. Basically means we have to detach ourselves from association with the opposite sex eventually. So that's the whole system of Vanaprastha is said in Bhagavatam that Maitunadi, the original knot in the heart is created by this sex desire. So that's what has to be loosened over the course of our life in order to fully devote ourselves to Krishna. So every ashram is it's working toward that aim to slacken the knock in the heart of the association with the opposite sex, that we come to the material world to enjoy. So this is a very scientific system, and if the brahmacharis are trained from the beginning in that system of conquering senses, then it will be easier for them when they agree us to take up vanaprastha ashram. And because they've already had some training in Prabhupada writes that this, because a brahmacharya was first trained in conquering these senses, he retires from vanaprastha life and becomes a vanaprastha as soon as the strong waves of youthful life are passed and he reaches the verge of old age of 50 years or slightly more. So because they've already been trained, then trained not to associate with the opposite sex, then of course there'll be attachment in Grihastha Ashram, but because of their previous training, they'll be able to again just take up Vanaprastha Ashram and continue to reduce their material lives. And Prabhupada says in his purport that one should separate from family life at a timely moment. So we have, all of Prabhupada's instructions have to be taken, how to apply them. So we know that we should become vanaprasthas, but for different people, different devotees, it will be different when is the suitable time for them, according to different considerations such as their finances, maybe their children. Brahmacharya is meant to be from up to 25 years old, but myself, I began brahmacharya at 22. So then I'm not going to spend 25 years as brahmacharya. So it's all gets mixed up in Kali Yuga. So therefore, some people become householders later, so therefore everything gets pushed back a bit. So by the time they're 50, they're not quite ready to take vanaprastha. So therefore, Prabhupada says, or slightly after 50. So there always has to be, not just a blanket. Prabhupada's instructions are not applied just black and white, have to consider them, how to apply Prabhupada's instructions in our own life. Not that we avoid them, but that we see how to intelligently apply them. So, and it's also important to note that the Vanashram Dham, we're interested more in the principles rather than the details. Because every time you read a description of Vanashram Dham or the duties of a householder, the duties of a kshatriya, and later in this chapter we'll read the duties of Vanaprastha, what Mahaprabhu did in the forest. And every time we read these descriptions, we find that that's impossible for us. No one can do these things. Mahaprabhu was wearing tree bark, and he said some of the austerities that the Vanaprasthas are meant to do, as described in the Vedas, wear tree bark. It's described that the wife should not comb her hair, because then her hair will become matted and the husband won't be attracted to her anymore, so that would help to reduce sex life. But we don't really, we have a few vanaprasthas in ISKCON, but we don't see them acting like this. We don't see them not brushing their hair, not shaving, wearing kriyabhar. So because it's not practical for us, so it's not possible. And similarly for so many other ashrams, even Grihastha Ashram, householders are supposed to perform like five the idea is daily, something like that. And brahmacharis, they shouldn't eat unless the spiritual master gives their permission. So we're more interested in the broad framework of Varnashrama, not the specific details of this is what a brahmachari is, this is what a sannyasi is, but more that, you know, the general idea that a housewife or someone who lives with their family, supports their family very dutifully and gives all protection to their wife and children, gives them charity, and, you know, brahmacharis doesn't associate the opposite sex. Just some of the broad principles of each ashram and varna we're interested in. So, and the varnaprastha, the basic idea is they retire from family life, probably they retire from their job, and you know, they're not so concerned with earning money, their children are grown up, and just living in any ashram, even Prabhupada says in Bhagavad Gita, that simplicity is recommended for every ashram. And the Varnaprasthas also, they just, you know, not living so, because in Grihastha ashram, there's a lot of material comfort. But even for devotees, they can try to just minimize that, just, you know, have a place to stay, but not live so opulently. And so for devotees, you know, because this Varnashrama Dharma is like the gradual, it's like the, I think, Kadamba Maharaj, he describes this Varnashrama Dharma as a safety net. So for devotees, we're more interested in the direct path of Krishna consciousness, which is increasing our hearing and chanting of Krishna regularly, hearing and chanting about Krishna, chanting every day, hearing every day, doing some service on a regular basis. So we're interested in that direct Krishna consciousness, Shravanam Kirtana, Vishnu Smarana. But if sort of we not able to fully get into that direct path, then we can fall back on the Varnashrama system, do our duties in the Grihastha ashram like that. So, because basically the Vedic culture is dead nowadays, because it's even in the Satya Yuga, there was no four ashrams and four varnas. In Krishna says in also in Guru Gita, just find that verse, that there was only, where is it? So he describes that there's only one ashram, one in Satya Yuga called Hamsa. And everyone belongs, everyone's just a Hamsa, everyone's a pure devotee. And because everyone's perfectly following the religious principles, then it's called Krita Yuga. And so everyone's just a Paramahamsa, meditating on the form of Krishna as a swan incarnation, Hamsa, avatar. So it was only in Treta Yuga, the following Yuga, that the four varnas and ashrams came into this existence. But now it's Kali Yuga, so in Treta Yuga and Dwapara Yuga, people were pretty good with the Varnashrama. But now it's Kali Yuga, and it's really, it's gone completely. Because the essence of the Vedic culture is this Varnashrama. So when we say the Vedic culture is dead, then we mean that the system of Varnashrama is dead.
Because no one knows what is said. Vana, Vule, Ashram, no one's interested in that. But still, Prabhupada explains that even if you have a dead elephant, you can still make use of a dead elephant. Still has some. I've never seen a dead elephant, so I'm struggling to think what uses you can get out of a dead elephant. So I thought maybe I can ask if anyone knows. Yeah, tusk with it, what do you do with the tusk?
Well,
I would
say you can make it
ornaments
and
make it good. Okay, oh yeah, of course, yeah. I read ornaments, okay. So you can use the tusk of the dead elephant for ornaments. And maybe the skin you can do something with, not sure. I didn't live in Vedic culture. Has anyone seen a dead elephant? So, but then, you notice in Bhujan Guru's classes that he always, he's so absorbed in Krishna consciousness and gives holy name retreat at Govardhana every year. So he always, and he studied Bhagavatam very, very deeply. So he always talked about Krishna Lila. So then when I was thinking about the dead elephant, then I thought about the elephant that Krishna killed. What's the name of the dead elephant? Kulai. Can you spell that? A very long word. Kulavaya Pita. So there's a very nice pastime where Krishna killed the elephant. This is, was anyone here at the retreat with Bhujan Guru? He might have just, because he was talking about the pastime of Kamsa.
Did he
discuss it? Yeah, I thought, okay. So that's very nice. Like people get disturbed by Krishna killing on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. This is a similar instance of where Krishna was very violent. And he, because Krishna and Balaram, they heard the drums sounding to signify the beginning of the wrestling match. And so they went along to the wrestling arena where Kamsa was preparing. The wrestlers were preparing for Shikar Chanaka. There was an elephant there who was guiding the way, wouldn't let him into the arena. Kamsa had placed there deliberately. And so then the elephant rider, elephant caretaker. He provokes the elephant to attack Krishna, and so then the elephant tried to charge at Krishna with his tusks, and Krishna jumped under his legs and went to the back of the elephant, went to his tail. And the word Prabhupada uses actually, you'll increase your vocabulary a lot if you read Prabhupada's books. Who knows the meaning of dexterously? Or dex. The root is dexterous. What does that mean?
Right-handed?
Not quite. Like, in the close. Dexterous? Krishna dexterously ran under the elbow. Agile. Like dexterous, usually in relation to the hands, someone's good with their hands, they're dexterous. So anyway, Krishna ran to the back of the elephant, and the elephant was confused, and so he again turned around and tried to charge Krishna. Like, Krishna, have you ever done this voice where you
Krishna did this to the elephant. He laid down in front of the elephant and made the elephant trip over. Did you ever do that to someone? He used to do that in the most all kind of it's a bit of a bully thing. You're kind of someone standing up and you're talking to them, and then someone crouches down behind them and falls on the back of them. So Krishna did this, everything comes from Krishna. And Krishna did this to the elephant, he made it trip over by lying down in front of it. And then but the elephant again got up and tried to attack Krishna once more. But Krishna snapped off his tusk and then ducked up onto the elephant and killed his own tusk. And the caretaker killed with the tusk. So it's very gruesome what Krishna did. Jayaradala, killing elephants. So then Krishna had sweat on him and he had blood covering. But still he looks very beautiful because he's all attractive. So then he kills the elephant and takes the tusk on his shoulder and strolls into the wrestling arena, and Balaram took the other tusk and also put it on his shoulder and went into the wrestling arena. So then Kamsa saw, oh my gosh, these guys have demolished the big elephant. So they must be very powerful. So I'll leave it there if anyone has any comments or questions about James Joseph's test.
Two questions, but they are related to each other. Mm-hmm. One is, in Satyuga, there is only one Varna, like Varna, that you said, they're all Paramahansa.
Mm-hmm.
They're all Hansas.
Yeah.
So, we see in previous verses, Prithu Maharaj, who was in Satyuga, was encouraging the citizens to follow Varnashram. Even when talking to four Kumaras, they said that, you know, to follow Varnashram Dharma properly.
Okay.
And secondly, if they're all Hansas in the Kriti Yuga,
mm-hmm.
why are they in the material world already?
Yeah, okay. So the question is about Prithu Maharaj explaining to the four Kumaras and also encouraging citizens to practice Varnashram, but how come he did this? Because in Satyuga there was only one Varna Hamsa. Everyone was the same life. Was it described that this pastime is in Satyuga?
Because I heard from somewhere that Prithu Maharaj existed in Satyuga this pastime.
Okay.
I don't have reference there.
I can't give a great answer. I can see that Prithu Maharaj is, you know, similar that Arjuna was speaking for all time, speaking instructions for all time. So then also Prithu Maharaj is explaining Varnashram for future ages, is also that's me, that's just kind of case, but yeah, I don't have a very good answer for that. And the other question that in the Satyuga, if everyone was Hamsa, like a swan like, why were they in the material world? The four ages that go through decline, gradual decline, starting, everyone's very pure and spiritual in Satyuga, and then it declines progressively in Treta Yuga, then the four lakes of religion are gradually removed. In Treta Yuga, in Kali Yuga, the truth, then truth, mercy, sees how he sees God. So, yeah, every soul is in the material world, they have their free will. But because they're in such ego, the contamination was less, so they have a greater opportunity to just get out of the material world and go back to Godhead. But even everyone that's here, like what Prabhupada explains, everyone is criminal, their mentality, because they had a desire to enjoy separately from Krishna. So, therefore, there's a need for purification. So even in Satyuga, there's a process of purification, which is meditation. They meditate for 60,000 years. But they're doing that to purify themselves, which means they have contamination of contamination of material desires. You know, less than what we have now, but still, they're in the material world, so there has to be material contamination. Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
The example of Parshuram was accepted as Shakti Avesha of God. I thought that it falls into the category of
Lila, perhaps, or what? Yeah, I was also kind of had a similar question myself, that there's the six categories of incarnation, and perhaps some of the incarnations fall in two of the categories, Lila and Shaktivesh. Yeah. But the Lila incarnations. Which are some of the other Lila incarnations? There's Matsya Kormas. So they're also, they come in, they fall in multiple categories. Yeah. Anything else? Grandpa, if you might have a time, keep. Should have a time, keep. Did I go over here?